Good evening. I just want to make myself some space here. I'm sure Bruce can sort this out later. Oh! I trust you've sung that song already. Well, good evening again, and welcome to Rosebank. It's great to be able to have a privilege of this opportunity to come and share with you. And tonight, I must be honest and say that I'm going to share from my heart, and by no means do I have this answer down pat. This has been a struggle for me when I want to share with you tonight for a long time. And I just want to communicate to you what's been going on in my heart and how I'm learning to cope with the struggles of life. And how does it connect with the Father in the person of Jesus who loves me very, very much. So I've given this a title, and I've called it Dealing with the Questionable Delays of God. How do we deal with the seeming delay of God to move in our lives when we're asking something of Him? And this has been thrust into my life and to my wife's life in our marriage. I'm married to the beautiful Nikki, and throughout basically the whole time that we've been in relationship, my wife's been sick. And that's been ongoing now for 3 years. We have done everything possible that I know of to see her get better. But she's not. We've pursued every medical option. We've done every way out there, freaky medical option you can think of. We've tried everything. She's still sick. We have prayed, we have fasted, we've got the healing prophets in to pray for her. She's still sick. The question I have with God in my heart is, how do I deal with that? How do I deal with the fact that my wife is still sick? When it's been 3 years. You see, this is not a sermon about healing. In the sense that we're thinking, I still believe, and my wife still believes, that she'll be healed. We stand on the promises of God that He'll heal her. But as of yet, He hasn't. So how do we handle that delay? In the interim period, how do you live for 3 years, every day, when you've got a valid question to ask of God? Why? And that's been my experience. That's my wife's experience. But I don't think we're the only two people in the world who have this question of God. I think many of us desperately want something from God. We've been asking for a long time, and our prayers are not being answered. We are in a situation that hasn't changed, and we're suffering, and we just want it to change. Yet it's not. Consider one I come across often is particularly is we're looking for a life partner. Many people are still single and they'd love to be married and they've been praying and asking, yet they're still single. And it's tough because you know how many weddings have been in this church in the last 12 months? I mean, I think I've been to 16 weddings plus minus in the last 15 months at least. My heart goes out to those people. They're there thinking, like, how can I celebrate? When everyone's getting excited around me, there's weddings and there's all these little pre-parties and all this fun, yet you've passed me by. I'm still single. Are you ever going to give me a life partner? I'm sure there's many of us here who can identify with that. A common one today is for young married couples is falling pregnant. Some people just, it's been years. They've spent thousands, if not tens and hundreds of thousands on all the medications that you can get into, yet you can't have a child. And you've been praying and you've been fasting and you've been asking God, like surely, one of the things in the blessings of marriage is children, yet we still don't have a child. How do you handle that? Financial situation. We know in our church right now there are many people who are struggling financially, unemployed, and you just cannot find a job. You are broken financially. You are unable to provide for your family, look after them, and it's killing you. And you're asking, Lord, give me a job. I need a financial windfall. Yet you've gone through the whole of the last year, and you still don't have a job. How do you deal with that? For younger people, it could be you're looking for purpose and direction in life. You're finishing school or your studies at varsity, and you don't have a job waiting for you. You're not certain what you should do, and you've been asking God, give me some clear sign, some direction in terms of life purpose and meaning and what I should do, and you still don't have an idea. And you're waiting, and you're getting anxious, and you've got to make decisions, but you don't have an answer. For parents tonight, you may have a child that you're struggling with and that they've totally abandoned you. They've turned their back on you. I know my mother, she prayed for me for 12 years. She told me this after the fact, that I'd broken her heart. But she persisted for 12 years to see me come to faith. I never stopped to consider how she dealt with herself for those 12 years when she would have daily asked God, please bring my son back. So parents tonight, you could identify with that. That you're longing for a child that has drifted from you, that the connection isn't there. I could go on and list. I just wanted to place that into your life, that there could be many different life situations. I don't know them all, but I want you to identify that you may find yourself in a place tonight where that frustration with God is creeping in. And how do you deal with that? You see, we have a moral issue here. And I'm learning this now, is that Jesus' timetable is not like mine. See, the delays of God are going to be one of the biggest things that you're going to have to deal with in relationship with God. It's going to be one of the biggest issues that you're going to have to deal with when it comes to these questionable delays. So I want us to turn to a story in the New Testament. It's in Mark chapter 5. You can turn there. And I must say, this story has been really helpful for me because I've heard it many times. And I want to pick up the sermon tonight where every sermon I've ever heard ends. So on this story, where most sermons end, I actually want to start. And I must say, if I could recommend somebody who's helped me greatly is Tim Keller, and how he has helped me understand the gospel and how the gracious love of Jesus is able to melt my heart and transform me. So I would recommend, if you're in this place, get your hands on anything by Dr. Tim Keller, and he will unpack for you in a beautiful way how the gospel works. And he's helped me get a deeper understanding of this and bring some sort of healing and help in my own heart. The story is a well-known one. We have a synagogue ruler, Jairus, and he comes to Jesus. His daughter is sick and she's about to die. And now Jesus is just beginning off his ministry, and he is the hottest thing on the block. If you read the preceding chapters in Mark, basically anyone who was sick or demon-possessed in Palestine was healed. He just literally went through the land and healed everything. And people were flocking to him. If you read the previous chapters, it says that they were pushing in on him. They were touching him. He tried to stop at someone's house for lunch, and he couldn't even eat because they were flooding the house. So you've got to understand the context here. It's chaos. There are crowds pushing against Jesus. And Jairus, the synagogue ruler, comes and he says to Jesus, I need your help. My little daughter's dying. Would you come with me and heal her? And Jesus says, yes. And off they go. But on the way, they stop. And Jesus is walking and he feels some power go out of his body. And it turns out that a woman in the crowd has touched him. A woman that has been sick, chronically ill for 12 years. And Jesus stops. And he talks to her. He engages with her. And he takes the time to interact with her. And essentially what happens is he enters into a discipling relationship with her. And he leads her to faith. So on the way, he stops. He engages the chronically ill woman. and he leads her to faith. So let's start reading in verse 35. While Jesus was still speaking, some men came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Ignoring what they said, Jesus told the synagogue ruler. I love this. Jesus says, "Don't be afraid, just believe." How many times have we heard that? I've heard that a few times in the last 3 years. When he did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue ruler, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and walked around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave them strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Remember where we began the story? Jesus was on the way. Very urgent situation. The girl is dying. And he stops to speak to the chronically ill woman. Imagine Jairus. He's standing right there. His daughter's dying. What's going on in his heart? I cannot believe this. He stopped to speak to an unclean woman. Socially not acceptable. In an urgent situation. What the heck is he doing? My daughter's dying. And there's Jesus talking to this woman. And there's Jairus standing there. As a father, can you imagine what's going through your mind? And make matters worse. At that very moment, his servants come to him and say, "Master, don't worry. Don't bother this miracle worker Jesus anymore. Your daughter is dead." It's too late. And then Jesus has that response. He says, "Don't be afraid, just believe." And normally our sermon ends there. And the moral of the story is, we know how it turns out. The little girl comes to life. Therefore, just believe. Don't be afraid. Now, I've found in the last 3 years that hasn't helped me one little bit. Hasn't helped me at all. Although it's true, we should just believe and not be afraid. But how? How can I build the faith to take Jesus at his word to say, "I'm not going to be afraid, I'm just going to believe. And that he will heal my wife." So I've found at that point, it hasn't helped me. So what I'm realizing is this. My understanding of the gospel, my understanding of grace and how much Jesus loves me enables me to build the faith to believe. So unless I pursue my understanding of grace, God's love for me, and what the gospel actually means, I will never be able to have faith to just believe and not be afraid. So what's the issue in the story? The real issue in the story is this question. What does it mean to be on time? That's the issue here. What does it mean to be on time? How late can you be until you're actually late? Because every culture is different. I've spent the last 5 years studying. And in my class, I was in the minority in terms of a white person. We had about 9 different nationalities from Africa. And I kid you not, every single day for 5 years, lecture starts at 8 o'clock. All the white dudes, 5 to 8. Books open. Big ESV Bible ready for action. Waiting. Anywhere between 8 and 8:30, The Nigerian would walk in, the Kenyan would walk in, the Ethiopian would walk in, and not bat an eyelid. He's not late. And you used to sit there and go, you've just walked in the middle of the lecture, we've probably got 10 minutes left, and you're not late. But he says, well, lectures go on until 1:30 today. I'm here. You see, and they keep reminding me, my friends, they keep telling me, is in Europe, you might own a watch, but in Africa, we own the time. And that's the difference, is how late must you be to be late? And the question in this story actually is, the issue is, what does it mean to be on time? Because the messengers have come, and essentially when they come to Jairus, what are they saying? They're saying it's too late. They're saying, boss, it's too late. Your daughter's dead. And Jesus replies, he says, don't be afraid, just believe. Jesus is saying it's not too late. What Jesus is saying is you cannot impose on me your time schedule and your agenda and your expectations. He's saying it's not too late. Don't be afraid, just believe. See, here's the thing we need to grip onto early on in our relationship with Jesus. When you have a relationship with God, you will constantly find that His schedule is not yours. You will very quickly learn that He has a different agenda. And if you don't understand this, you will feel like He's putting you off. You will feel like He doesn't care. You will believe that you deserve things and you're not getting them. Your prayers you are making are not being answered. And these constant delays are going to make you feel like this is inexcusable. It is unacceptable for this person who calls himself God. You need to understand that His agenda and His timetable is not like yours. It's not too late. And you're going to feel like Jairus. God's sense of timing is totally different. And He has the crazy, most difficult thing. You're going to constantly be waiting for an apology that will never come. You're going to be waiting for an apology that will never come. Because you're expecting that He should do it the way you want it. And in the time schedule that you want it. And He's saying is, don't be afraid, just believe. I'm working on it. So what He means is, He says, you can't impose your understanding upon me. I will keep my promises. But not just in the time frames that you expect. Or in the way that seems appropriate to you, that you think it should happen. That's what He means when He says, don't be afraid, just believe. But this poses a serious problem. And I ask you this question, how are we going to handle the questionable delays of Jesus? The starting point, as I've mentioned, is with the wisdom of Jesus. And this is where most sermons end, but I'm starting there. You see, if we look at the text and the story, what it's going to show us is that we're going to see some stuff that the people in the story can't see. From the outside, that's where we're sitting. We're looking from the outside. We know the beginning from the end. And we know that Jesus, from the story, can deal equally easily with a dead girl and a sick woman. We have that information. I read that story and I go, well, cool. Jesus can heal a sick woman and raise a dead woman equally easily. It's not a problem. But the people in the story don't know that. Jairus doesn't know that. But if we were in the story, we would probably be the same as Jairus. Surely it makes much better sense, logical sense, that we have the wealthy, prominent synagogue ruler with a young daughter in much need and a social outcast, unclean, despised, rejected, sick woman. Surely Jairus is more deserving, and his daughter, they must go there first. We would, if we were in the story, I'm pretty certain be the same as Jairus. But what we see is the opportunity to turn a superstitious woman who didn't have a lot of faith in Jesus. He was the miracle worker passing through town. And the opportunity to go to her and to bring her into a personal relationship with God that lasts forever and solves her biggest need of her life is what needed to be done. And that's the real issue, was her salvation. And Jesus does that. So what we see is Jesus does what is right. And he always does what is right. So what I can learn from that is right now, if you find yourself in a difficult situation, struggling with the delay of God, you don't have all the information. You don't know everything what's going on. Because you're in the story. You're not on the outside. But what I've found is that it's insufficient to help me. Because where it leaves me is this. It leaves me in a point where I go, okay, I know that God knows everything. I know that he has infinite knowledge. All I've got to do now is just try harder, pray more, keep my faith, and everything's going to be all right. It helps me, but it doesn't get me through. So the first step in dealing with the questionable delays of God and of Jesus is to know about his infinite wisdom. But we have to go deeper. And what I've discovered, as I shared earlier on, is I've discovered it lies in the grace of the gospel of Jesus. I have to explore and plumb the depths of my heart so that the grace of Jesus begins to melt my heart with his love and transform my understanding of how much he loves me so I can deal with these delays. It's been 3 years. Still waiting. And until I am willing to accept and embrace God's grace, I'll always feel hard done by. I'll always think that I'm undeserving and God is wrong. So this story for me gives me a beautiful picture of the grace of Jesus. And I want to show that to you. And hopefully it's going to rip open our heart that we can see God totally differently and be blown away by who he is and how much he loves us. I want to contrast for you the two people in the story. We have the woman. Unclean woman. No faith. Very little faith. Didn't profess any faith. She comes, reaches out, touches Jesus, gets instant attention, and she's healed. We have Jairus. Prominent synagogue ruler. A man of great faith. How do we know this? Well, Jairus comes in public amongst a great crowd. He's the ruler of the synagogue. And he gets on his knees before Jesus. And he begs him. He says, please, my daughter is dying. Will you come and heal her? He's professing great faith and belief in Jesus that Jesus would heal her. A man of great faith, a woman of little faith. She's a woman. Women in this society had no rights. A single mother or single woman. Unclean. Can't touch her. Jairus, righteous man. Deserving. Head of the home, head of the village. Worthy. And what do we see what happens? Jesus takes the time to comfort and teach the unclean woman with a chronic problem, but he causes a male church leader to wait. He takes the time to comfort the chronically ill, despised, rejected woman, and he causes the male church leader to wait. What do we have a picture of? We've got a picture of God's grace. You see, the picture of the gospel is not the way we think it is. The way God does life and this world is totally opposite to the way we would do it. See, the gospel reverses the values of the world. What is the gospel? The gospel is the cross. What is the cross? The way up is down. The way to power is to serve. The way to life is a willingness to die. The way to spiritual wealth is to admit that you're spiritually poor. The last shall be first. And the way to become royal is to lay your crown before the real king, and that's Jesus. That's the gospel. It turns everything upside down. And when I look at this story and I see the way Jesus treats the woman, I get a picture of grace. And I think of myself, and I'm an undeserving sinner who rejects Jesus. I never wanted God. He sent his son for me. And he died and he solved my biggest problem for me without even consulting me. This is grace. And this story is beginning to show me that's how Jesus deals with us. That's who he is. And grace works in the opposite way to the world, not in the way we would expect. We would think he would go to the prominent wealthy man, yet he goes to the sick, chronically ill woman. He comes to us, all of us, undeserving. We are lost. We don't even desire him. Yet he demonstrates his love for us in laying down his life in order that we might have life. And we don't deserve it for one second. So what I'm learning here is he's infinitely wise. He knows everything. Yet he's absolutely gracious. But I need to go deeper. We need to go deeper. It shows us that God is gracious. It gives us a picture of what grace is. But I need to take it from the rational part of my brain to allow it to melt my heart. I have to allow the grace of God demonstrated in the love of him through his son Jesus. I need that to break my heart. I need that every day to melt my hard heart, to realize how much he loves me. I need to go deeper with an understanding of the gospel. And when I get there, what I'm learning, I'm not perfect. You ask my wife. But I'm realizing if I can get deeper, he begins to melt my heart. He begins to change me. I begin to get a deeper and better picture of who he is. And this story takes us even further. It takes us further. And I want to show that to you. Let's take a sip of water. You see, Jesus goes to the little girl. And he says to her, Talitha kum. Little girl, get up. Now, the Hebraic term is little girl, and it's the diminutive of girl, so it means little girl. But what I've discovered is, in reading a little bit further in the commentaries, is actually Talitha Kum is a pet name. It would be better translated honey. It's the type of thing that a father would say to his daughter. That's what it is. It's a loving father coming to his daughter. And you got to have this picture that he is coming to his daughter as a father would in the morning and say, honey, here's the tea. It's time to get up. I love you. You're my beautiful daughter. Let's get up. And what that demonstrates to me is something very profound, is that we see tremendous power and we see the tenderness of the heart of Jesus. Because what amazes me when I meditate and I think upon this, he comes to her. And this is what he does. He doesn't say, stand back and put on his white suit, take an offering, put a TV camera on and heal her. No. He clears the room. He clears the room. And he has the parents and his three closest disciples. And then he does something profound. He simply, as a loving father, to his daughter, he sticks out his hand and he says, take my hand. Honey, it's time to get up. And he lifts her up. What is he doing? He's lifting her up out of death to life. Just there, just like that. Honey, get up. He's pulling her right through death to life. There is no greater enemy, opposition, anything in life than death itself. And what does Jesus do? He simply comes in and he says, honey, take my hand. I love you. Come. It's time to get up. And we see tremendous power, but we see tremendous tenderness and love. I see grace there. I see the ability of a God who can do anything. You know what he's actually saying when he does that? I love this. He's saying is, if I have you by the hand, death is nothing but a good night's sleep. If I have you by the hand, your father says, if I have you by the hand, death is nothing but a good night's sleep. If I have you by the hand, there's nothing that can hold you back. Your situation, your context, your struggle, if you have me by the hand, It's nothing but a good night's sleep. So I ask myself, why can he do that? Why can he hold her by the hand and lift her up out of death so easily with such grace and care and love? And this is the thing when we get to the gospel. When Jesus was on the cross, suffering with the sin of the world thrust upon him, having his heart ripped out because of us, he lost his Father's hand. When he was in the Garden of Gethsemane and he prayed, he said, "Father, take this from me. I don't know if I can bear it." His prayers were rejected. He was turned down in far worse ways, over far bigger issues than anything that I could ever be turned down for. And when he was on the cross, his Father did not reach down and take him away. He suffered. He died. He took his punishment that I put him there for. That we put him there for. And the reason that Jesus can be so gracious, so powerful, and so tender, the reason that he can go to the weak outsider, the despised, undeserving person, is because he lost his Father's hand and he's given us his. That's why he can do that. He actually lost his Father's hand so that we can have his hand. He paid the price for me. My sin put him there. And he becomes the true father that I actually need. He becomes the only parent that can help me. And my Father, Jesus, sticks out his hand to me in my time of need and he says, "Quentin, son, it's time to get up." And he just lifts me up. And he can do the same for all of us. It's because he lost the hand of his Father, we are privileged enough to get his hand that can help us. So where does it leave us? In an application or a practical understanding of dealing with the delays of God. I have to reflect upon a God who loves me like this. I have to take some time out every day. When the delay of God's healing on my wife's life is not coming, I have to stop and take time to reflect upon a Father who loves me like this. Infinitely wise. He knows everything. Unbelievably tender. Absolutely powerful. Completely gracious. Who lost his Father's hand because of me, yet he still gives me his hand to give me his life. And I'm forced to ask myself this question. Why would I hurry someone who loves me like this? Why would I want to hurry someone who loves me like that? No one loves me like that. No one in the world will ever love me like that. No one in the world can ever do what he can do for me. And when I reflect upon the depths of his love for me, I'm left with that question. Why would I want to hurry someone who loves me like that? And this is the key to handling the questionable delays of God that I'm learning. Until I see him loving me like this, hung on a cross, and I gaze upon that cross every day. Until I see him having been turned down in far worse ways than I will ever be turned down. Until I see him turning down Jairus and me. Until I see how Jesus through the cross deals graciously with a sick woman and a young girl. Until I see how he brings undeserving people like us into salvation with him. Until I see how he is able to overcome death by raising a young girl from death to life, and that he suffered the ultimate death that actually solved my biggest problem, which is my sin, until I see how his death meets my greatest need, hanging on a cross, dying for me, far greater needs than my current needs, until I ponder upon this,
until I meditate upon this beautiful gospel of grace that demonstrates me a love of a Father, my heart will never be melted to be able to deal with the fact that my wife is not healed. I have to plumb the depths of God's love for me every day. And it's tough. And I fail. But unless I go there, unless I receive and understand that I have a Father who loves me so much, I will be bitter and twisted. I will hate God, and I will start drifting away because He's unfair and He doesn't give me what I deserve. You see, when I begin to realize the depths of His love, when He makes that statement, "Don't be afraid, just believe," this is someone I can put my faith in. Only then can I start to put my faith and trust in Him when He says, "Don't be afraid, just believe." Because He's demonstrated His love for me. He's shown me His love. And I have to remind my heart every day so it gets broken again and again. You see, one of the reasons why we can't handle the delays of God is simply this. It's because we have a problem with self-righteous works. And the only thing that can remove our self-righteousness from us is the gospel of grace. It's only Jesus. It's His righteousness, not mine. And that's the biggest problem we have when trying to deal with the delays of God. Because deep down, this is what I've discovered with my own sinful heart, is I believe God owes me something. Why am I frustrated? Because I believe He owes me an answer. And I believe He owes me not just an answer, He owes me the answer that I want. I deserve better. It's not fair. I studied at Bible college for 5 years. I read my Bible every day. I pray. I work in a church. I'm a righteous man. You should answer my prayers. But He hasn't yet. I'm filled with self-righteousness. I think I deserve something that I don't. You see, unless you allow the love and the grace of Jesus to sift your heart and to remove your self-righteousness, you will never be able to handle the delays of God. And it's hard, and it hurts when we examine ourselves and we're suffering and we're struggling and we're just waiting for that husband. We're waiting for that job. We're waiting for that child to return. And we've got to deal with that in our heart. And the only thing that can help you is the love of God. You see, Jairus believes well and he's rejected, so to speak. The woman believes very poorly and she's saved. And that's gospel of grace. And that demonstrates to us that God loves us. It's got nothing to do with our pedigree or our merit. It's got everything to do with the gracious love of the Father. So how do I deal with the questionable delays of God? I have to believe the gospel. And I have to preach that gospel to myself every day. And I have to plumb the depths of His great love for me. So I pray that you pray for me and help me. And I'll pray for you that we would learn to grasp how wide and high and deep is the love of the Father. Because it's only when that begins to pour over us are we changed at our heart. Can we live in a broken world? Amen.